It's Holiday Monday after a busy full weekend that had a little bit of everything, good, bad, and different on the track and off. Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, how are you?
Good, good, good. What do you say?
What do I say? I say we're racing again today.
I know. In fact, you say that, and I had to print this out because I was actually... You know, some of these Holiday Mondays, you know, two or three of the circuits that run, you know, Wednesday to Sunday, you know, it's typical. But today, everybody's got a card, a holiday card. Aqueduct Fairgrounds, Golden Gate, Gulfstream, Laurel, Mahoning and Parks are Monday, Tuesday tracks, Oaklawn, Santa Anita, and Turf Paradise. So in addition to the usual... suspects on a Monday. How about virtually every A track running?
Like a kid in a candy shop.
Well, there's
opportunity everywhere.
Especially, I mean, obviously the Oaklawn card with the three graded stakes and that Razorback, which is an absolute war. The Razorback is eye crossing, and the Southwest has got its appeal, of course, on the 3-year old front. By Akoa, not a big field. I thought Samantha Siegel looked pretty good in the By Akoa. We'll do some capping and see if you got any opinions. But Johnny, let's first get a little weekend update. How'd you make out?
Did okay. And my most enjoyable outcome was Mr. Monomoy. And exacta. That was my most enjoyable outcome. Mm. And then pick five at Santa Anita later in the day. That paid $500. But the Mr. Monomoy, I really liked the way he was developing. It seemed to me that he was about ready, you know, to take the next step. And I thought the price was very generous. So I stepped up because I thought it was a spot that I don't see that often. You know, you look at a lot of races and you see one that you kind of, that you really like. And then the facts kind of back it up, the number, the form backs it up. And then the price is good. And the pace in the race, the pace set up, like it would help. Everything seemed to just come together. So that was my best result. The thing that almost got me, and you know, sometimes it helps you, sometimes it doesn't, but I went back and which I like to do, I went back and watched the replay of his previous race, and I'll tell you, he didn't really have much of an excuse. You really had to, you know, play it on the come, excuse me, which I believe was the case. I believe he was getting better. And so I last as, you know, a step along, another further step. And, you know, so after the race, there's been a lot of discussion about whether that track was, you know, incredibly biased towards front runners. I don't know if it's incredibly biased, but it seems after the result of the next race, Modernist, winning the second division, and I think it was a not NY traffic hanging around for third after being on the pace.
Mm-hmm.
The second horse came from off the pace, but it there could be something to that. I can't dismiss that. So it's nice when a bias goes in your favor, if that was the case. But bottom line, I think you've got to have the facts behind you. And I just like the way he was coming into the race, and it worked out. Once in a while, you find the right horse.
It went off at 15-2 too, which, as you say, when by the time they were going postward, it seemed like you know, he was the post time overlay. I mean, if you were watching the board, in a couple of horses that, you know, that took Blackberry Wine, took money and you know, ran okay for, you know, for three quarters before starting to back out of it. But, you know, Enforceable and Silver State, I keyed off of them 1-2, and I kind of thought they were just slightly, you know, slightly more likely. And as the day was going on, Johnny, and, you know, there was obviously they were alternating with turf races. I got a little, you know, I started to get a little nervous about the way I had bet that pick four, and I didn't play I'm not interested in the black gold, but I kind of was nervous by the time the time they were going postward, and I could see the way he was traveling that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't getting beat, even with the way Enforceable closed, and I'm sure people that, you know, that bet Enforceable are everybody loves to beat up Julian Leperu, but I don't know what else you were supposed to do. I mean, that's his running style, and he set up shop at the back of the pack. Santana was right where he figured to be with Silver State. So I think the top three, you know, the top three all come back toward toward the Louisiana Derby, and we should get another nice war of 14 when we get to Derby Day.
You know, it's kind of with these three-year-olds, you have to kind of guess. I mean, guess, whatever you want to say, because you've got the twos turning three, who maybe have a race. We're getting at the point where, you know, everyone's kind of getting a race now in the new year. But even then, where does that race fit in with the horse's previous form? Is it better? Is it a little better? Is it much better? Is it too good? And I think with that was my feeling with Enforceable, is that last race was just, you know, he'd improved. He was getting better. And then he took his big step. And what I was looking for in this race, I also, I think Blackberry Wine, a similar case where, you know, he's getting better. His November, December races were good. And then he just fired this huge number, 94 buyer, if you want to look at other numbers, same thing. What's that liable to do? Is he liable to go forward off of that? Or is he going to take a backward step? And these three-year-olds, they'll take these leaps. And with a horse like Mr. Monomoy, I kind of saw this progression just getting a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And I thought, well, today's his day. And got what, you know, you're fortunate when things work out the way you think they will. But he just, you know, it was his day. Now, I think he got it. What did he get? A 90?
92.
92, which is not ridiculous for what he had going in, but you'll have to compare it and see. You know, I like to look at the thoroughgraph numbers and see where they all fit. And see where the number fits in the development. The other division, you know, I was bullish on an Odor. I didn't bet him because you're really guessing. But I was bullish on his two-year-old races. I didn't hear of an excuse. Did you?
No. Blaine Wright was as dumbfounded as anybody, and he certainly looked poised, on the backstretch, and you know that he was sitting, you know, nice stalking. I thought, you know, especially after the first division, where you know part of the lesson might have been don't leave yourself with too much to do, and the blinkers being added, I suppose. Especially after British Idiom, you know, the question you always ask, not that she ran terribly, But the question you ask is, you know, are these 2 year olds?
Yeah, well,
storm the court too. Are they advancing at all, or are they precocious types that's what you get.
Yeah, and then you've got to answer the second half of the question. If you do find a horse that you question, or sometimes the price will take care of a horse for you. Like, you know, if you're looking at an Odor and you're seeing a really short price, and you say to yourself, well, I don't know if this horse has made the step from 2 to 3. And at that price, I don't want to find out. So you go searching elsewhere for someone else in the race who you maybe believe is going to make that step. Now, to find the winner, Modernist, I would have had to go some to do that. I couldn't. First of all, the maiden to Grade 2 Stakes Company is always something that I try and avoid because it's hard to do. It's difficult. You don't see it very often. Now, was this a complete Grade 2? Was this an official Grade 2 if you start to look through the runners? Yeah, maybe not. And Modernist, the one thing that, well, two things he had going for him, he was very sharp and he'd won at 1 mile and 8. So it wasn't just any maiden race. It was 1 mile and 8 maiden race, and he won powerfully. So, you know, and he didn't overextend himself. If you look at, if you want to look at buyers, if you want to look at Thoroughgraph numbers, his win was not outrageous. It was not off the board. So, if someone said, look, here's a sharp horse who could take, who's already shown at 3, he's got something. The next step would be to say, I don't like the favorite. You know, let's take a shot with him. It would have been a reach for me, as I said, but I could see somebody doing it. It wouldn't be crazy, especially if you look at, like, you know, a horse like Liam's Lucky Charm, who feels like a sprint type and had run a couple big number last time. And you start to look around the field and you say, you know, who else is there? Who else has credentials? And like I said, I couldn't make the leap, but I understand anyone who could.
It's funny that you bring that up, the maiden to stakes, and our friend Otis that's on Derby Trail with us and is a partner involved in horses with Team Valor. Otis wrote a thing up on Saturday and laid out some stats, and they were actually largely positive and largely, you know, evident of opportunity with that. And my counter to the maiden to graded stake discussion was, well, in this era, it's not as if horsemen have a lot of options. I mean, you just at this time of year, you know, into September, you know, let's say beyond the summer meets, Ellis, Del Mar, and Saratoga, if we're talking, you know, premium 2-year-old prospects, where else are they going to go? It's not like they're running a ton of allowance races. I mean, there's some, but if you got a good one, you're going to go into stakes. So I don't know how much evidence there is. I mean, I think you'd have to really dig in. I don't know if it's any different than any other stat for the kinds of horsemen that are involved winning graded stakes with maiden special winners.
Yeah, I would like to see, if you're going to do a study like that, I would like to see you take out 2-year-old races, obviously, because in so many cases, a stakes race is the next start. But if you take out 2-year-old races and you look at the older horses, obviously that's really hard to do. If you're 4 and up and you haven't broken your maiden until now, that's really hard to do. So if you're then just looking at three-year-olds, you're right. The opportunities, you know, the opportunities are not there. And if you look at who the trainer is, and you say to yourself, well, Phil Mott, mile and an eighth, breaks a maiden at a mile and eighth. He wants another mile and eighth race. Where are you going to find a mile and eighth dirt non-winners other than for three-year-olds? Might as well run him in the stake and find out how good he is. Especially since post-race I read comments. I didn't read them pre-race, but post-race Mott said the horse had come out of that race so well that he decided to take a shot, you know. And again, you look at the rest of the field and you say, if an Odor doesn't fire, if he doesn't make the step from two to three, which, not to say, well, anybody may not fire on any particular day, but to say, if he doesn't make this step from two to three that we know exists, we know that's a real thing. If he doesn't show that he's matured, who else is there? And if you start to look around at the field, yeah, you know, I guess he could get there. I mean, you know, NY Traffic was third, and, you know, his form, wasn't that great. I mean, you know, you start to look at the rest of the field, and they weren't all-stars. It wasn't a grade two lineup, I don't think. Plus, it was divided, and, you know, it came up, this end came up weaker, I think, everyone would agree, than the other end. Everyone said that going in. You know, it's just, you look at these upsets, especially with the good horses that we all know. We know so much about them. and with three-year-olds, we're trying to learn. It's not hard to see somebody new step up. You know, it's hard to put your trust in one that hasn't shown that three-year-old ability yet. It happens, and it happens with the ones. It seems the ones that are some of the ones that are really highly regarded. Those are the ones you have to look at. And we just named three of them here from the last 2 weeks that were short prices that got beat. Doesn't mean they ran poorly. You know, if you're looking at the Storm the Court, I'm sure his connections feel like, okay, well, 7/8, that's a good place to start. We've got to go, you know, from here. We've got to move forward. And we didn't get beat all that far, and they ran it pretty fast. So we're on target. But it's if you can go against them in their mutual pools, that's where you can find the big ones.
That's certainly at this point, you know, whatever we are, 6.5 weeks, 6 weeks into the year, this is one of those lessons I think you file away. And you know, the numbers that have come back in spots. I mean, not that, for instance, you know, not that Finite was a big price, for instance, but the prices when there have been, you know, full fields and places to go against, you know, those returnees. I mean, we used to have that, Johnny. One of the other long-running maxims that's gotten a little bit. There's two of them, actually. The long-running bet against of returnees from Dubai, that seems to have moderated. But the long-running maximum of betting against Breeders' Cup returnees, that paid dividends for an extended period. You know, but obviously, you know, horsemen learn those lessons too, and they adjust.
Yeah, and it's really the public that you're taking advantage of a situation where the public is overreacting to the press clippings of a certain horse. What's his name? Maxfield? Is that the one where everyone's waiting?
Yes,
to get back on track and to come back. And I can't wait for Maxfield to show up at the entries because I'm going to find somebody to play against him because, nothing against Maxfield, but what he's trying to do, he's been away, he's going to come back, and the public's going to hammer him. And he's going to get overplayed because that huge, sweeping, tremendous win is still in people's minds. And, like, if he were in the Breeders' Cup, he would have won the Juvenile, and, you know, and he hasn't run in months.
Exactly. This is one of those cases where, you know, being in the clubhouse, you enhance your reputation by not showing up and not appearing. Well, beyond those three-year-olds, I mean, there was other, obviously, there, you know, we're looking forward to the Southwest today, but there was also some points to be had in SF and up at Golden Gate. Azul Coast won, didn't get, you know, didn't, it wasn't a fast race at all, but it was, you know, it's on the Tapeta, and it's hard to know, and I'm sure Baffert will try him back on the dirt. I thought it was impressive just because of the way he ran. It seemed like he was bobbing up and down and didn't really like the surface and wasn't enjoying the going, and yet he's still, you know, able to overwhelm that field, and he galloped out well. I don't think people will be all excited about, you know, him coming out of the El Camino, but it's 10 points, and you know, he also had been second in the Sham, so he's worth a little subplot to mention.
If he's in 90% of the other barns, he's the big horse. In Baffert's barn, he's not even in the starting five. You know, it's his bench is so deep that he can take a horse like Azul Coast, and he just won that race on pure dominance. Pure ability. He's just that much better than those other horses. And you're right. He didn't look like he was going anywhere, but he just, you know, he just had that much more talent. Excuse me. I thought a similar situation with Gouverneur Mars, who you mentioned earlier, that he was being scrubbed on pretty well. Looked like he was going nowhere, but then he just kind of kept at it, and he kept gaining and gaining, and he ran reasonably fast too. So it's just that when you have that talent, when you have that reservoir of talent, boy, talent overcomes a lot of stuff. And on the other hand, when you start to make excuses for horses at the upper levels, and you start to make excuses, after you make one or two, you better stop. Because the good horses, that's what makes them good. They don't need excuses. They get the job done. I love when I'm going through the PPs and I'm doing the old school handicapping, and I start with the furthest back running line. And I go line by line, and I got win, second, third, stumbled start, second, win, second, stakes race, not on the board, win, you know, and all the way through. And those are the kind of horses that I call them pros. And they just show up. They show up every time. They give everything they have. And you don't have to make excuses for them. You know, once in a while, they're going to have something go wrong. But the bias, the pace, the this, the that, whatever you want to say, doesn't matter with those horses. Because they're like the model of what a thoroughbred should be. They just show up, they do it every time, and it's a stretch of, sometimes you're talking about from a year. And they just keep showing up. So good horses don't need as many, which is why I'm interested in Odor. I mean, I Googled the horse because I wanted to see, and all I got were 100 articles talking about before the Rising Star. I couldn't find anything after. I found one after the Risen Star, and it was a quote from Rosario, who said it wasn't his day. And I had to laugh. I brought back the On the Waterfront. Not my night. Not my night. Could have taken Wolf to the park with one hand.
And what happens?
He gets a shot at the ballpark. He gets a shot at the title of the ballpark. And I get a ticket to Falucaville.
It was you, Charlie. It was you.
But, you know, look, sometimes it isn't a horse's day. That happens. I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't happen often with really good horses. They show up, and when you find one of those, and there's, look, I'm not saying you're going to find one of those at the PPs that's going to be 6-1. Sometimes it happens, but not a lot, not very often at all. But they may be 2-1, they may be 8-5, and I'll tell you what, I also call them foxhole horses, because if I got to be in a foxhole, I want this horse with me. And they run, and they will give you, and you'll win more often than you lose. I'm not unearthing something that everybody doesn't know. I'm just emphasizing it to look for those kinds of horses.
Now, Johnny, in addition, lots of action to summarize. Let's slip in. I don't want to let it slip away either. I know that Tom Quigley won winner, but it was a pricey winner that probably did some damage. Beat the host results yesterday, Saturday.
Yeah, one winner. Host of Roan at Santa Anita in the seventh race, $34 based on the $5 win wager. So host Tom Quigley, not a bad performance. Like you say, it was one winner, but it was a decent-priced winner. Leading the charge, if you look back on all our hosts for the first 7 weeks in the books now, Ron Nicoletti, $48. He's leading the charge. John White, $43. Jeff Siegel, $35.50. And Quigley checks in next at $34. So not a bad performance from Mr. Quigley. Wasn't as good as the top players, though. Top players, Barry Edwards, $130 was his total. He gets a $1,000 prize. Larry Klingensmith, $123 in earnings, $750 price. Raymond Perkins, $116.50 and a $250 prize. We are down to the final 2 weeks of Beat the Host, and in the cumulative race, Kevin McFarland has taken over the lead. Ruben Genovese, who was leading for, I think he led for 3 or 4 weeks now. He dropped back to third. He had a rough week. He only added $6.50 to his total, so he dropped back to third. Kevin McFarland, who we talked about earlier, he had won 2 weekly competitions, which 2 weekly prizes, which is, I tell you, that's incredible. We've been doing this a long time, maybe somewhere around between 10 and 15 years, and I don't remember anyone winning 2 top prizes in a single season. So he climbed back on top. He had a big, good week. He, $87.50 was his total for the week. He's at $545. Kevin Stang is second, $514.50. Ruben Genovese third at $513. So it's tight at the top, but, you know, as we saw last week, have a good week, and the leaders have an off week, you can still jump up. I mean, you can't jump in now and expect to win, but it's going to be an exciting race to the finish here with 2 weeks remaining. This week's host is Acacia Courtney, the simulcast host at Gulfstream Park, one of that trio of hosts down there. And as far as Sweep the Host is concerned, we're down to 42 players with two weeks remaining. We started with 623 people, and we're down to 42. So it's moved along pretty well. It's still a larger number than we've seen in the past. Remember when it first started, we'd be down to single digits about now. So I don't know if the horse players are getting better or the hosts are getting worse. One or the other.
It's a combination, so, I think.
We're down combination. To 42. And if you want to play, if you want to get in the fun, $2,000 in weekly earnings, I mean weekly prizes, for the top three finishers. Go to expressbet.com, register for Beat the Host. It's free to enter, to register, and you make a live $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 races, and you try and accumulate the most money possible. And if you lead the charge, you'll go home with $1,000. Plus, you get to keep what you win. These are live wagers. So if you pick a few winners, you could pay for the day. You all right?
Johnny, I'm glad you're on. There's very tough news. There's very tough news coming out of Oakland in this last little while. There'll be. Some media, I'm sure, a release at some point soon. But apparently, Taraz pulled up stricken earlier this morning, and from every indication, it is just unlikely that she was. Wow.
This game, this sport, this business, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, it's tough. It's incredibly difficult. Any horse, when any horse is injured, it's a serious matter. There's a pall that comes over everything. If you're on the racetrack and you're out there in the morning and or in the afternoon or any time and something happens, there's a pall over the entire gathering. Everyone feels it, which is why I become incensed that people who don't know the game believe that people who are around racing or love racing don't care about the animals. It just really incenses me, because you can feel it, and everyone is not the same for the rest of the morning and the next day, and it's there. Now, when the horse that's injured is a star, a budding star, that makes it even worse. Like, I'm not going to equate her to Kobe Bryant, but there was just so much sadness for Kobe Bryant but also there were other people in that helicopter. And my thought was, what about these other people? You know, but I know they're not, we don't know them like we know Kobe, and we don't know some horses as well as we know other horses. So it makes it even worse. But anytime it happens, anytime, there's a pall. It goes silent. And there's something in the pit of your stomach. And when it's a star, a budding star, because there's so few, they're so brilliant. There's such a lack of brilliance in the world that when we lose brilliance, it hurts more than, and it shouldn't. I mean, a loss is a loss, but it's just the way things work. So that's whether, you know, whatever the final determination is, hope it's better than worse, but it sounds like it's worse.
Yeah. You know, some of the, you know, there's all kinds of, I don't want to say trite sayings, you know, the slow ones don't get hurt, that kind of thing. And that's not true either. You know, but you're very accurate, you know, in terms of, you know, potential and in terms of excitement and so forth. Well, I was actually
excited by her, really. And I mean, I'm an old hide. It takes something to get me excited at this point, you know, as far as talent, as far as ability, and you know, she had that sparkle. So, yeah.
Wow. Hearts go out to everybody involved, the Cox Barn and Garrett O'Rourke and the Judd Mont team. And everybody that was behind. Teresa, that's tough. Johnny, take me in another direction here because
Take you in another direction. Okay. Yeah, all right, we'll get you rolling here.
Just disheartened.
Okay, so I love when I see goofy stuff that happens when I'm handicapping races and watching the races. You know, Gulfstream, I did all the work for Gulfstream on Saturday. Handicapped the entire card, had everything mapped out. And, of course, they got hit with one of those rainstorms that not only just flies by, it just dropped a bathtub full of water on the racetrack. And, of course, off the turf, and you got a sloppy track. And it's a game. We have to deal with that kind of curveball. But anyway, so I'm still watching the races and still paying attention. So in a race on Saturday, I think it was the third race, won by Prince of the North. I mentioned this the other day on the air, but this is a shorter field, but the horses finished in order of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which we used to call a racing rarity, and I would maybe go back to 7 or 8 instead of just 5, but still. You think of all the races that you watch and everything is done, you very rarely see the entire field finish in the exact post position order. So I see goofy stuff like that and I notice it. Also on Saturday, in the sixth race at Gulfstream, which was a 12-5 claiming race going 3/4, they had 6 runners originally. No, had 7 runners originally, 1 scratch. 5 of the 6 runners that started were changing barns. either through claim or transfer. What, five of the six were starting for a different trainer in the race. And I thought that was really weird. I looked at a lot of races, and I don't remember ever seeing a race where five of the six starters were going for new outfits. And the one that scratched would have also been starting for a new outfit. So it was six of seven in the original lineup who were racing for different trainers. You know, all of this means nothing, Steve, but this is the way I spend my life.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, yeah. And what about Baffert's, man?
Charlatan.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, do they never end? I mean, they just keep coming out of that barn.
Well, and what was interesting about Charlatan's debut win yesterday, didn't go favored, and it didn't seem to have, it's not as if the horse is working out at Santa Anita between XBTV and you know, Clocker Andy. It's not as if, and Toby Terrell, it's not like they're hiding these horses. And yet, for whatever reason, Charlatan didn't go favored and was jaw-dropping. I mean, just was spectacular.
Yes, I agree. And what's crazy about it, you look at who did go favored. Can't remember his name, Mandela, finished third, first time out, second time starter for Dick.
Laneway. Laneway, yeah. Behind that was behind Nadal.
Yeah, that's where I was going with this. You run into another map. You know, it's like, but this was a case where watching a replay helped instead of hurt, because when I went back and I watched Lakeway's first race, I said, you know, it's okay. You know, Mandela's not going to run a short horse. He's not going to over-drill one. He's not going to have Baffert-like works, but he's not going to run a short horse. And, okay, so he chased Nadal. And maybe he got, you know, he got winded from doing that, but he didn't hold second. He lost second to another horse that came up on the inside. And I thought to myself, you know, that's an okay race, but they're getting drunk on this horse. They're going crazy for him.
Yeah.
And here's Baffert drawn on the outside. It's almost like anything the guy with the white hair runs. Any first-time starter, you got to pay attention to him. You really do. And I think he had another one in there that he scratched. Am I right about that? I'll have to pull that race.
I've got it. Yeah, I got it.
Did
here,
he scratch
too.
The rail?
Well, he does constantly draw the rail. I've got it. It's in the... It's in the D pile. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking. I don't even know if this point is worth it, but the point I'm about to make. Yes. JV, my man. Bob Baffert, scratch from the rail. Okay, so here we go. There's six horse field. You know they wanted six to make the race. Baffert puts two in. Well, it was another one in there, Jeff and John's Thunder, Jeff Bondi. But Baffert puts two in to make the six, so they use the race, and then he scratches one of them. It's just one of those things that you see. Now, I don't know if that – look, I'm sure something happened to the horse, and that's why he was – you know, they had to –
Yeah, he's not afraid to. He's not afraid to run both. I mean, that's
not.
Not
at all. He's not afraid to run from the rail either. But I find those things interesting. And
by the way, Johnny.
Yeah.
105 buyer.
Oh, good night.
105 buyer, and somebody said. Oh. I think it was Nick Tamaro, who's with Buyer Associates. Nick said that this was going to be a justify kind of a figure, but a 105 debut, and it's not as if he was under any duress.
No.
To run.
Oh, that's scary. That's scary. That is scary. I mean, but the problem with that is it's almost too good. Where do you go?
Where do you go from here? Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you go? The only way you can go is down. You can't go up from there unless it's the greatest horse that ever, you know. I mean, this is a 3-year-old first time out, and, you know, people say, oh, comparing him to Justify and whatnot. Let's not do any comparing to Justify until we have to. Okay? That horse was a... Now I know I might be putting my foot in my mouth, and I may have to apologize for this, but as far as I'm concerned, that horse was a special case. And let's not do any comparing to Justify until we get to a point. What he did was so amazing, incredible, unbelievable, to not just win the Derby, but the Triple Crown with that late start. It's just, let's not do any comparisons. You know, whenever I hear a trainer, an owner, a jockey, a handicapper, anyone mention the S word, compare a horse to Secretariat. Whenever they say anything about Secretariat, that horse will not live up to any expectations from there on. That's the kiss of death. So I don't know. Justify's not quite in that position yet. And we need some time to go by. But he may be in that position. I know the game's changed. I know you can start later. I understand all that. The fold crop is not as big. And I know all the reasons. Guys aren't getting as many races into them. And yeah, I know all that. But still, wrapping my head around what this horse did from maiden to stake to, you know, from maiden to allowance to stake to Kentucky Derby. I mean, just Triple Crown. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
There's a couple of things about this that are a little trickier. This is a Spitestown. Not that Spitestowns, you know, can't stretch out and you know, so forth.
Yeah.
That he can certainly stretch out. However, the family. The Quiet American Mare. Well, the Quiet American Mare was a nice, that Authenticity was a nice mare, as it happens. I mean, she was, I know she, did she, I don't, did she may have won something like a Madison or a La Troyenne or, you know, some sort of a grade one sub ballerina type of a race. But I mean, she was nice. I don't remember her as a router. I have to look her up as a router ground type. But she was a stake mare, no doubt about that. So if there's going to be stretching out down the road, it's going to have to come. Maybe the combination. I'll talk to Sid about this on Wednesday. The combination of Spitestown with this mare. We'll see if there's something there. But anyway. This is quite something. There is actually, now I am looking her up, and she did win the La Troyenne, but it was a grade two at that point. She won the Shoe V, so that's one turn. She won the Shoe V. Actually, she won that at Saratoga when it was moved up. That might have been the first year that it moved up to Saratoga. She was second in the Personal Ents in that year as well. She had a big year in 2013. She was second in the Zenyatta, second in the Phipps. So multiple grade one place, and she was third in the Breeders' Cup Distaff that year.
There you go.
Yeah. Authenticity.
I hate the 105.
Well, we'll see what Baffert we'll see what he thinks about it. Johnny, did you got an opinion or two for at all? I'm going to get Nick in here shortly to look at Oakland and the Southwest and so forth. Did you get a chance to look?
I did look at the Southwest. I kind of like I kind of like Wells Bayou. Maybe I'm just coming back with a Brad Cox and a Giroux because they won for me Saturday. Maybe I'm just partial to them. But I think this is another one that's kind of improving a little bit, coming off a very sharp win. Hasn't run on a fast track yet. Three starts on off tracks. So, but this is the first race, and then kind of a speed and fade, and then came back and won easy again, has the rail. Yeah, I'm looking at that one.
All right. What else? Anything else?
That's enough for now.
Definitely. No, I appreciate it, Johnny, and thank you. Thank you for the help at the bottom there, getting that sad news, the horrific news out.
Yep.
Johnny D, everybody. Well, XB Johnny D.
Move on. Stevie?
Yeah, exactly.
Happy President's Day, by the way.
Well, and to you. And to you.
They said George Washington could have been king if he wanted to. I think he had a 105 buyer, too.
There's actually, you know, there's a story, the fact that Washington comes up. There was a big story out of Philadelphia this week. I don't know if you read it in the Inquirer, but about the collection that the Historic Society has sold off.
No.
Yeah, there's pretty fascinating. The Historical Society of Philadelphia, which is one of the countries. You know, if those movies with Nicolas Cage were true, that would be a place to rob. But they're in very big trouble and financially, and they canceled their. You know, it's one of the two or three big society functions in Philadelphia. The other one, the Red Cross Ball at the Bellevue Stratford New Year's Eve, which I actually went to one of those, which was a lot of fun. But they've canceled the ball, and I happen to read this story regarding President's Day, and there was a collection that was bequeathed to them that was supposed to stay intact, and it was sold. It's been sold off to raise money. I mean, to keep things afloat. So a little tidbit, from. Yeah. President's Day.
You know what they say around the racetrack? Hard times will make a monkey eat red pepper.
That's a great line. Good job, Johnny. That's one that you heard on the rail as a track agent, right? Yeah. Well, Johnny D, thanks so much.
Funniest guy I ever met. He was a jocks agent. And his son is doing well in the business now. Jerry and Gordo was a jocks agent. He had Pat Valenzuela, probably the top. He had Pat for most of his career. Funniest guy ever. He had more sayings. Made me laugh. I'll tell you.
I love it. Yeah. And... A name familiar to racetrackers, without a doubt. Johnny, I appreciate it. Thanks for the help here.
Stevie, go get him.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's tough. It'll take you out at the knees, whether it's one of yours or one that you're a fan of or one you just see out there. Not for the faint of heart. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're going to do some handicapping. That'll get us going. Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and we'll look at the stake sequence and more from Oakland. And there's a whole bunch of the runbacks yet to come. There's quite a few today of the horses that may have been compromised from opening weekend that are coming back at good prices and potential bet againsts, including maybe Gold Street. Gold Street might be one of those that you take a stand against. Back after this, Hour 3.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
ExpressBet's popular and profitable $50,000 Beat the Host competition is back in 2020, and this is your chance to win big. Merely place a live $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. If your earnings top the host total, you win. Register once and compete Saturdays in January and February for a healthy $2,000 in weekly prizes with no takeout, break, or skim. Beat the Host just once to qualify for the $10,000 championship round. New this year, Beat the Host features a challenging and fun cumulative season-long earnings competition with over $20,000 in prizes paid to the top 10 finishers. Whip hosts in all 8 weeks to earn a share of a sweet $3,000 Sweep the Host bonus. Don't delay. Register today for Beat the Host free at ExpressBet.com.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
ExpressBet's popular and profitable $50,000 Beat the Host competition is back in 2020. And this is your chance to win big. Merely place a live $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. If your earnings top the host total, you win. Register once and compete Saturdays in January and February for a healthy $2,000 in weekly prizes with no takeout, break, or skim. Beat the Host just once to qualify for the $10,000 championship round. New this year, Beat the Host features a challenging and fun cumulative season-long earnings competition with over $20,000 in prizes paid to the top 10 finishers. Whip hosts in all 8 weeks to earn a share of a sweet $3,000 Sweep the Host bonus. Don't delay. Register today for Beat the Host free at ExpressBet.com.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.